EDM board bombs.
And we're back, EM board bombs. Welcome back to the number one podcast in emergency medicine based on probably some survey I could find somewhere online. Who knows? But we are one of the top-ranked podcasts in emergency medicine, if I do say so myself. Dr. Hussain would agree with me. However, he is not here. You know, he is tired. He's tired. ITE season was a busy one for us. We launched so many rapid bombs, so many awesome pearls of wisdom and high-yield information for people taking the in-service training exam if you're a resident physician, and just, you know, life pearls for our main listeners anyway. So awesome to be back here the week after the ITE. Hey, it's a chill season now. The rest of spring is nice and smooth for us here, but we still have to give content, right? There's still, you know, medicine going on. It's not like our emergency patients take a break after the ITE ends. So again, we're a podcast about the foundations. We're not just telling you what's on the boards. We tell you that hashtag EM life knowledge. So happy to be back. Oh yeah, I'm the co-founder, co-host, Blake Briggs. Dr. Hussain again, not joining us today. He is sleeping in today. He is enjoying his weekend. And he said, you know, he just texted me and, hey, Blake, you got this one. You got this one. Just take care of it for us. And don't worry, I'll take care of it. I got it. Hey, so we got an awesome STEM today. I love this question. It's a great trick question. And now that I've told you it's a trick question, you're going to think about it harder, maybe get it right, or maybe you'll overthink it. Who knows? All right, so before we delve into this question, STEM, I have to give credit where credit is due to Emergency Medicine News, EM News. You can check them out online. There's also print subscriptions as well. All of this is free. If you're an emergency medicine clinician, you get access to this. Great articles, great online content. They also have a podcast webpage that's free as well. Really awesome stuff, so check it out. We want to thank them for being the only sponsor of this podcast. Yes, that's right. We're very selective. We get a lot of offers, but we usually turn them down. And the only one we allow is EM News. So we got a 60-year-old male presenting to the emergency department with sudden onset confusion, right-sided weakness, and slurred speech. He states he was sick of going to the INR clinic and decided just to wing it when it comes to his warfarin dosing. He read a really nice article on Reddit talking about using humidity levels outside to correlate to his own CYP450 enzymes. Apparently, it also correlates with vitamin B12 levels, according to this Reddit article. Now, none of this makes sense to you, so you continue with your history and physical. His past medical history is significant for hypertension and atrial fibrillation, of which, of course, he is on warfarin for. His vital signs are normal. So a non-contrast head CT is performed and reveals no acute intracranial hemorrhage. The patient's INR is 4.5. Which of the following is the most appropriate next step in management? Choice A, give intravenous vitamin K. Choice B, give fresh frozen plasma. Choice C, give prothrombin complex concentrate. Choice D, give IV transoxemic acid. And choice E, give Alteplase or TPA for thrombolytic therapy. Correct answer here is going to be choice C, give prothrombin complex concentrate, also known as PCC, also known as Kcentra or FEBA, depending on what place you work at, what your institution has available. So this patient is presenting with acute ischemic stroke symptoms, and he has a history of AFib on warfarin with an elevated INR, which indicates over anticoagulation. Turns out B12 levels and the humidity don't correlate with INR levels. Go figure. Hey, but before we get into why this answer was correct, we have to mention EM rapid bombs. So the ITE just happened last week. Newsflash. If you are a resident and didn't show up to work that day to take that test, you might want to email your program director to make that test up. It's required every year. Anyway, so that test is over. For our rapid bomb subscribers, they got some premium access to studying for that test. And we've gotten a lot of kudos from people who have taken the test already saying, wow, this tremendously helped. It reduced that stress level of studying, taught you what you need to know for life and for the boards in a quick, distillable way. I'm not sure if distillable is the right word, but we're just going to say that. Really awesome stuff here. Each episode is 2 to 4 minutes. It's tailored to rapid learning. We tell you what you need to know. We tell you the coaching aspect, where we tell you how the test is going to ask you certain questions. And our whole design is drip learning. So yes, the IT happened last week. We know. But that doesn't mean you just stop studying. This preps you for an entire career in emergency medicine. With over 400 episodes and counting, we add new ones each week still, you're getting a growing body of information. Each episode comes with a script as well, so you can read through certain numbers, certain things we tell you about, graphs, etc., and links as well to certain handouts on our website. All-encompassing learning, one of a kind. No one else is doing this type of question bank teaching. So check it out. All right, so again, this patient, 60 years old, had right-sided deficit, slurred speech, classic code stroke presentation. Now, the most appropriate step here with an elevated INR, normal CT head, but stroke-like symptoms, you're still going to reverse their anticoagulation. And the reason is we want to prevent hemorrhagic transformation of that acute ischemic stroke. It'll be a much higher risk if the patient is anticoagulated, especially with an INR in this case greater than 4. Now, prothrombin complex concentrate, PCC, we've talked about this before on the podcast. This, again, is either the brand name K-Centra or FIBA, or there's other brands out there. Those are the two most popular ones. They're the preferred agents for rapid INR reversal. Now, it also is used in patients who are on direct factor 10 inhibitors, which would be like rivaroxaban, apixaban, which are also known as the brand names, again, not sponsored by these two, Eliquis or Xarelto. Now, administering IV vitamin K, which was choice A, is also necessary to give here for long-term INR correction, but it works too slowly to be effective in acute situations. Fresh frozen plasma, choice B, that was the alternative to prothrombin complex concentrate, which is actually a harder phrase to say, to kind of slow down when you say it, but it's less preferred due to a lot of issues here. One, slower onset of action. Two, you have to actually get a blood type and screen on these patients to give fresh frozen plasma because it's donated. And it's also a larger volume requirement, so older patients that you're giving large volume to, maybe not a good idea, especially with history of heart failure. And so it's really taken second place to K-Centra and FIBA. Now, IV tranexamic acid is used in the management of acute bleeding. It's not indicated here at all in the case of managing patients with acute ischemic strokes. And then, of course, TPA or alteplase for thrombolytic therapy is contraindicated in patients with an INR greater than 1.7. due to an increased risk of bleeding. So let's get into TPA here and acute stroke management. So boards are never going to cover the specifics of where is the lesion when it comes to diagnosing where a particular stroke is. And as an emergency doctor, you don't really have to know this either. General trends here you can know just from medical school, really. Most people know certain deficits correlate to a certain side of the brain, obviously. That's really the extent of what you need to know as an emergency doctor. Now, the latter in terms of where the particular stroke is just not high yield for boards at all. It doesn't change the management in the ED. Your role as an emergency physician is to recognize stroke, that it is a stroke or could be a stroke, and then successfully navigate the field of stabilization in these patients. And then discussion with neurology regarding thrombolytic therapy. So TPA, always a controversial topic. We're not debating it here. We don't want to enter that debate. A few years ago, it was really hot. I think it's still lukewarm. People have kind of moved on, but it's still one of those debates that's very controversial. We have our own opinions on TPA, but our job is to teach you what you need to know for practice and for the boards. In practice, you will be having patients that get TPA, and until that changes, it is the standard of care in the United States, whether you like it or not, and it's board testable. Now, strokes are all about the classification, location, vessel, and deficits that are noted. This is all critical in determining treatment pathways. What you need to know is that TPA is a standard of care. It's going to be on your exam, and there are absolute exclusion criteria to TPA. Now, let's logically explain these. Okay, so any prior ischemic stroke, any head trauma, or any head or spine surgery in less than 3 months. That sounds like a lot, but really anything less than 3 months that had to do with the brain or spine. Just think about that. Stroke, trauma, surgery, brain and spine. Boom, done. Any prior or current brain tumor or hemorrhage. So if they had a brain bleed before or a mass in the brain, so any mass effect in the brain, automatically exclusion criteria to TPA. Any GI cancer or bleeding. Cancer's less talked about, and we don't really know about that, but bleeding, how about that? That's a more common thing people know about. So any GI bleeding in less than 21 days. The blood pressure exclusion criteria is, I think, something everyone knows about. We've seen enough of this in real life The blood pressure greater than 185 systolic or greater than 110 diastolic is an exclusion criteria. Now, if that's lowered appropriately, sometimes they'll give TPA, but just remember that blood pressure number greater than 185 or greater than 110 is an exclusion criteria. Any type of internal bleeding suspected, again, I'm just reading these off, I'm going to summarize them in a minute here, but a lot of these overlap, which is easy. Platelet count less than 100,000, INR greater than 1.7, or PT greater than 15 seconds, or PTT greater than 40 seconds. Do you have to memorize that? Absolutely not. None of those numbers have to be memorized. They're never going to give you an INR of like 1.9 and say, oh, do you remember what the cutoff is? It's 1.7. You know, they're never going to do that. I gave you purposely an INR 4.5 in this question stem to really show you, wow, that is out of whack, right? The test doesn't want to confuse you close to that border of, is it INR 1.6 or was it 1.5 cutoff? I don't know. Don't worry about that. Don't memorize those numbers. Any therapeutic heparin use within 24 hours, that's one people forget about and probably not going to be tested. Any DOAC use within the past 48 hours, I think this is one that we don't really ever follow in real life, let's be honest. Extensive hypodensity on CT consistent with irreversible injury, so basically a completed stroke. Again, a controversial area. I wouldn't really call this an absolute exclusion criteria that you're ever going to be tested on. So let's summarize this again. What are really the key points here you have to memorize? So the blood pressure, again, I'll reiterate it one more time. We already know this one. We see it every day. Any blood pressure greater than 185 systolic or greater than 110 diastolic is an exclusion criteria to TPA. Any type of bleeding that happened in the GI tract less than 21 days ago or any active bleeding now are contraindications. Any prior brain tumor or hemorrhage, boom, done. You can never get TPA. And then the last one, which is, I think, very important to remember and may have the most trouble remembering it, is any prior stroke, head trauma, or head or spine surgery in less than 3 months' time. So anything that happened traumatically or stroke-like to the head or spine region in less than 3 months, boom. All right, so any patient who does get TPA gets admitted to the ICU for a minimum of 24 hours of monitoring. Any decline in neurologic function, new headache, nausea and vomiting, sudden rise in blood pressure, all that necessitates the next answer choice, which would be what? CT head, obviously. This is going to rule out an intracranial hemorrhage. This is by far the most serious complication of TPA that you will be tested on and in real life. It's the scariest one. The incidence of a symptomatic ICH following TPA administration ranges from 2% to 7%, with higher rates seen in older patients or those with more severe strokes. Obviously, are we surprised here? Major systematic hemorrhage outside the brain, 2% of patients. Angioedema, 5% of patients. Imagine trying to intubate someone with angioedema that just got TPA. Sounds like Nightmare on Elm Street. In those with symptomatic intracranial hemorrhage, the mortality is quoted as high as 82%. Whoa! No wonder we all have concerns when we give this medication. However, the risk of symptomatic ICH will increase with certain factors here, and we're not going to memorize these, we're not going to read these off, it doesn't really matter. There's no proven reversal strategy for TPA, but essentially your treatment strategy is reversing any other anticoagulation the patient was previously on, followed by giving pretty much every other reversal agent and blood products because, you know, why not? So think cryoprecipitate, antifibrinolytic agents, prothrombin concentrate, we talked about that. TXA, platelets, you can give them if the count's less than 100,000, why not? FFP, protamine sulfate, you can give that if the patient was previously on warfarin or heparin. And one symptom that's really interesting here, they may give you the question, is that if the patient that got TPA has some bleeding gums or oozing from the IV site or bruising that appears, this is very common, especially in older patients. It does not require cessation of TPA. Now, of course, any type of GI bleeding or any mental status changes or neuro changes obviously warrant the rapid CT head scan and halting TPA. So what are the risk factors for TPA complication? We'll end on this. They are the obvious ones, the older the age, anyone already on an anticoagulant, and the stroke severity. The most high-yield risk factor here, and this is the one they're going to test you on, is time to treatment. The risk of ICH increases with longer time intervals between stroke onset and TPA administration. Awesome. So let's summarize here. Again, absolute exclusion criteria to TPA, blood pressure greater than 185 over 110, any type of GI bleeding less than 21 days ago, any prior or current brain tumor or hemorrhage, any prior ischemic stroke, head trauma, or head spine surgery in less than 3 months. And that is really it here. That's all they're really going to test you on. Sure, therapeutic heparin and DOAC use within the past 24 to 48 hours, that's just not that testable. The numbers of all the platelet counts and the coag numbers, sure, but they're never going to give you something borderline. They have to memorize these numbers. They're going to be very obvious. Okay? Awesome. I don't know why I asked okay. No one can reply back to me. You're listening to a podcast. Remember to check out EM Rapid Bombs. It's not too late to start studying here, drip learning. It's not just about the boards. We tell you what you need to know for life, just like this question here. We're telling you stuff about TPA for the boards. We all know that TPA is controversial. And notice how we skirted right by that in a nice way of just telling you what you need to know for the test and all the bad things that can happen in real life. And that's really about it. We didn't go into the details of whether it's good or not, because that's not our job. There's other podcasts that can do that that are far nerdier than ours. All right, so hopefully Dr. Hussein joins us for the next episode here. He is sleeping. He's probably on a beach somewhere. And that's a pleasure to have you with us today. If you're in a cold place, I hope it gets warmer for you. If you're in a nice warm place, I'm very jealous. We'll see you next time. Thanks for joining us. Thank you.